There has been a surge over the last few months of alcohol-related calls to a HSE support line, with a nearly 40% increase since June. Alcohol addiction has always been a problem, however, for many people, with the pandemic merely exacerbating it. One man from Clare, from Clare Castle to be exact, who has opened up on his own battles with alcohol is Noel Considine, who you may know from his time hurling for Clare at various levels, and he's on the line now. Noel, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And thank you very much for joining us this morning. I'll start off by talking about your own story, if you don't mind. When did you first take a drink?
I started probably sampling drink at maybe 14 or 15, you know, like a lot of young lads do. Probably 14 or 15, but I was drinking seriously at 17 because, you know, and it's nothing to do with having played senior hurling, but I was playing senior hurling at 16 and I was... mixing with an older group, I suppose. And I was actually pub drinking at 16, 17.
And was that down in part to a different culture between then and now? Is that culture still there, maybe?
The culture is still there, but it was different back in the... That was the mid to late 80s, you know. And, you know, it's probably the only vice that was that was prevalent at that stage, you know, drinking. Yeah. I mean, whereas now, unfortunately... There's drink, drugs, and gambling. My time, you were frowned upon. The drugs, like the people I drank with, and the other guys, if you took drugs, they wouldn't want to be with you. And gambling wasn't a big thing. You know, there wasn't mobile phones. There wasn't. So it was really just drinking. But yeah, to drinking. You know, being able to go into school 2 days after and say, "Lads, geez, I was on the beer with the lads yesterday." So sure, I thought it was a great thing that time, but no doubt it wasn't.
Absolutely, indeed. When did it become a problem?
It was a problem from day one. It was a problem from day one because it changed me. I often say there's two type of problem drinker in my eyes. There's the person that drinks too much, too often, which I became as I got older. And there's the person that can't handle drink, which I was as a young fella. It just drives me cracked. Can you imagine a young lad of 16, 17 years of age drinking 10 pints and a couple of glasses of whiskey that just drive me cracked altogether. So it just changed me for the worst, unfortunately. It made me argumentative. It made me violent at times. I went home and I caused trouble, and I got violent at home, verbally and abusively violent to my parents. And there was times they had to call the guards to take me away because I just couldn't handle drink. I was drinking too much for a young fella my age, and I wasn't able to handle it.
And you
as I got older.
You didn't grow up in a house with alcohol or being around that much?
God, not at all. My mother is a non-drinker. She absolutely despises drink. She hates us with a passion to this day. Thankfully, she's alive and well and in great health. But my dad, who passed away in 2002 at 59, he drank 5 or 6 pints of a Sunday night. He used to go down to Mrs. Callanan's pub in Clare Castle. Johnny Callanan, the great hurler's mother's pub, and he'd go down and, you know, he had a great affection with those people. Every Sunday night, him and his friend Paul would go down for 5 or 6 pints down to Mrs. Callanan or to Breed or to Mary Glar to Mercy Nurin. He was very fond of them and they were of him, and that was his. So, I only ever saw a steady, normal drinker that would have a few pints of a Sunday night, but no, I didn't grow up in a house where alcohol was an issue at all.
So there was no inkling then that it would become a problem for you, and I presume then for your parents, with respect, when you talk about being verbally abusive when drunk, it must have been very hard for them to deal with you for a time.
It was. You see, my mum hated drink, so if I had drink, I tried to sneak in and not let her see, because it would have caused war at home, and she would have let me know. She wasn't happy about it, you know. So from day one, then my drinking had to become secret, and I had to lie about where I was going and lie about what I'd done. So it was all a problem. But it was a problem from early, because I was hospitalised at 18. I was dried out for the first time in September 1988 in Our Lady's Hospital at 18. And there was 9 hospitalizations before my 21st birthday. I left Our Lady's Hospital to play an under 21 final with Clare Castle on Thursday evening. The match was on Saturday, and the only person that knew I was in being dried out coming up to that match was the manager of the Clare Castle team. And you know, they brought me. I came out and played the under 21 final. I didn't play very well. Wolftones beat us, but so it was a problem from day one. It was a problem from day one.
If there were 9 efforts to dry you out before you were 21, does that mean, for the one, your heart wasn't in it? You were going through the motions?
I was. Unfortunately, I got into a bit of trouble with the law, and there was. You know, I stopped to get myself out of that trouble. I started going to AA. It's funny, that first hospitalisation, of a Tuesday night, two men came into the ward to bring me to an AA meeting. And one of them has since died, Lord have mercy, but the other man, Mike, is still sober around Ennis today and still goes to AA. And I've seen that man for the last, 88, 98, 2008, 30-something years. And I was in and out of AA, flittering in and out, and he was always there sober. And I often met that man in the street, you know, and he'd always say, "How you know, all kinds of things, how you doing?" But you know, so it did sow a seed. I can tell you, some of the people that were at that AA meeting that night, some of them were looking down on me now, minding me, but there's still some of them sober around Ennis. So it did sow a seed, you know, and it ruined my drinking. Like, even though I continued to drink for 30 years after it, on and off, I admitted I was an alcoholic then, but I didn't accept it. There's a huge difference, you know.
What is that difference?
The difference is, I'll admit it to get you off my back, or to keep a job, or to keep my place on a hurling team, or because my partner or my mother or my father or the law give me the ultimatum. And if I'm off it for any of those reasons, the minute something goes wrong in any of that department of my life, I'll drink again. Whereas now, I'm off drink for an all. That's the difference. It's hard for a non-alcoholic to understand the difference between admitting and accepting it, but there is a huge, huge difference. I suppose today, no matter what, my primary purpose is to stay sober. Like I know today that I suffer from the third biggest killer disease in the world, alcoholism. And it's a word I hate, alcoholic or alcoholism, but that's what I am. I'm an alcoholic that suffers from a disease called alcoholism. It's the third biggest killer disease in the world, they say, behind heart disease and cancer. Maybe not at the moment with the COVID thing, but I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, yeah, I know.
But I would suggest that the amount of heart problems and cancer that drink causes, it's probably even higher than number three. So, like, I suffer from a disease called alcoholism, and wouldn't I be very foolish not to try and stop, and because it can kill me. There's a couple of answers to this thing. You either get sober, you end up in jail, or you die. I was very close to the other two. Like, by the time I was ready to stop drinking, I was at death's door. And a few occasions, you know, if things had gone further than they had gone, I could have ended up locked up. So, like, it's three things happen. You either get sober, you end up in jail, or you die.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line of it, really.
And when you put it that way, it just seems like common sense. Of course you try and dry yourself out. Of course you try and fix the problems that are going on. And yet, for you, you were drinking for 30 years. It took you a long time to come to that realisation, or as you say, to accept that fact.
When the compulsion for alcohol came on me, like, I was a binge drinker. I wasn't drinking every day, every weekend, every night, anything like that. I was a binge drinker because from the beginning, you see, it was a problem. And then I was also playing hurling. I was on county teams and everything. So I was going on it and off it. And then I suppose, but I always knew I was fighting an inner battle for 30 years. I always knew if I spent a period on the dry because we were coming up to playing a Munster Championship match, or because of a job, or because of hassle at home, or whatever, I always knew deep down in my gut that at some stage that compulsion was going to come up again. And that compulsion always beat me. Like, I could never fight it off. And I wanted to. It was destroying my life because I was living a double life. I was a walking contradiction. You'd see me sobering up and getting my life back together, and I'm a good old car salesman, you know, and I always had a good job. And then suddenly, bang, again. And, it was absolute torture for 30 years for me, but it must have been double torture for my family and the people close to me that were seeing this guy that could be a decent father, a decent son, a decent partner, a decent employee, a decent member of the hurling team, and then suddenly, bang, all goes to pot after one drink. Because the minute I took one drink, Gavin, I was at nothing. It beat me to a pulp every time, you know, and it did. Like,
the last time I think it did that was Christmas Eve 2014, and you gave an interview recently where you spoke about how on that day of all days you were an extremely low ebb.
Yeah, it would be 7 years this Christmas Eve. So that was 2013 Christmas. I had been working in Limerick, and basically my binge drinking was now every night because I was living away from home. I was staying inside in Limerick, and I could go every evening I suppose that's just where my life was gone. It's all I had in my life at that stage. My family, I won't say they turned their back on me, they never did. I'm a lucky man, I had probably the best family in the world, every one of them, because what they put up with, they should have been long gone. But basically, I was living away from home. I had cut contact with my family and I was drinking every night. And it was gone to the stage where I wasn't able to drink a pint anymore. It was all vodka and the little pub bottles of Diet Coke. I was using 7 or 8 vodkas to a bottle and maybe 2 or 3 bottles a night, which was a lot every night going into me, and a few bottles of beer just to help me to pee, basically. But it was destroying me. I was gone yellow, I was passing blood, I was basically everything was gone. And Christmas Eve that year, it was the first Christmas Eve I hadn't spent with Aaron and his mother, because obviously we always had a little ritual of going away together Christmas Eve. Yeah, Aaron, my son, and we were, it was picking at me all day, you know. But then obviously the more drink I'd put into me, because I was clever enough in one way, when I'd been inside around Limerick City, I'd have 2 or 3 drinks in every pub. I didn't want them to know I was a drunk. They knew damn well, but I thought, I was fooling myself thinking they didn't know. And I was heading out over Sarsfield Bridge that Christmas Eve to head out to the other side of the city to the pub I was staying regularly, and a family came against me. About 6 o'clock, a husband and wife and kids, and they had their shopping and they were holding hands and they were laughing and joking, and it was the same as if somebody just hit me with a pole over the head. I just broke down. I said, "What are you doing to yourself?" And I went on my knees. I just started roaring, crying on the bridge, and something just was different, and something hit me that this wasn't what I was brought up to do, and this wasn't where my life should have been. And For 20 seconds that evening, I wanted to go in over the bridge, and that scared me. And I asked my father and my grandmother and my other two grandparents, if they were looking down on me, to just please help me. And thankfully, somebody, power greater than myself, definitely got me away from that bridge, because if I'd gone in, I wouldn't be talking to you.
Of course. It's a real turning point, though. It wasn't just a fleeting moment. You acted on it, and life obviously has improved massively since then.
Yes, well, I went into Bushy Park the 6th of January, or the 7th of January. The 6th is little Christmas Day, isn't it? The 7th of January, and I spent 5 weeks in there. Now, when I came out for the first year, I struggled. I broke a few times. So basically, I'm 5 years sober. For the first year, I know why. It wasn't lack of acceptance and everything. It was lack of my program. I wasn't practicing my program properly. I vetted away from it a small bit. And that's probably where the difference is today. I accept fully today that I'm an alcoholic, but that there's a few little things I have to do. One is I ask for a bit of help every morning from a power greater than myself, and I'm no holy Joe. It's the God in my life. The God of the Catholic Church is my God. I mean, I didn't have any negativity on me from the Catholic Church, so that's the God I believe in, and I believe He keeps me sober one day at a time, and I have a very, very, very strong belief in that. I ask Him for a bit of help every day, just stay away from one drink for one day, you know, and then every night before I go to bed, ritually, I will say a quick little prayer and give a bit of thanks for staying sober for that day. I suppose that they say the price of sobriety is eternal vigilance, you know, and I just have to be vigilant about my sobriety every day. And I don't make a big issue of it, but if I were to go back drinking, God forbid it never happened, but if I were to go back drinking tomorrow, that won't be the reason I drank. It'll be because my attitudes and my behavior, and I had gone back to my old way of living and my old way of thinking long before that, and the drink will be just the last. Would be. So I have to be careful about the way I think, about the way I behave. You know, I can't let anger or resentment or hatred or bad feeling come into my life at all, because if I do, I'm at nothing, and eventually I'll drink. And you know, I have fantastic support. Like, I mean, AA is brilliant. I have to mention Bushy Park House. It was my 5th treatment centre, but the other 4 weren't the fault. That I didn't stay sober weren't the fault of the treatment centre. I was gone in for the wrong reason.
Yes.
But when I went in, Bushy Park were just brilliant. Like, and you know, everyone up there, the staff, the residents, the aftercare, like I wouldn't be where I am today, but for them people at all, and that's there for anybody. If Noel Considine can get sober, anyone can, because I was a walking disaster, Kevin.
What I'm struck with, though, is you describe yourself as a walking disaster, as an addict, and yes, particularly on the hurling field, and but even in your life, in your professional life, people would have seen a man who was performing very well in spite of all of that. I'm struck by that dichotomy. It baffles me to a certain extent.
Yeah, I was a walking contradiction. I was a walking contradiction. You know that song, Chris Christopherson, walking contradiction, partly truth and partly fiction, taking every wrong direction on his lonely way back home. Well, that song wasn't about him. It was about me. Okay. but like when I hear that song, I get emotional because he isn't talk like obviously he was an addict himself. But any addict can relate to that. You know. Yeah. You see, I was a binge drinker, and that was the biggest. That was my biggest failing towards my family, that they saw this guy that was going so well for 4 or 5 or 6 months, and then I just throw it all away. I was going okay in the sport. Look, I was a very good goalkeeper with a lot of natural ability, but I didn't achieve a quarter of what I could have achieved as a hurler. I mean, like, okay, I was unfortunate to be around in Clare at the time that the best Clare goalkeeper of all time, or him or Seamus Jurek, Davy or Jurek, but I would say Davy is the best Clare goalkeeper of all time. And I was unfortunate to be around when he was there, but like there wasn't much between us, but he had, as well as the fantastic natural ability he had and the brilliant goalkeeper, he had the work ethic, and he wasn't drinking and he wasn't acting the maggot, and they couldn't rely on him, you know. So I didn't, yeah, hurling was great. I was lucky. I was part of the Clare Castle team that was a brilliant, brilliant team, and we won championships. They'd probably have won them with anyone else in goal as well. They just happened to have a very good goalkeeper myself, but they would, you know. But so yes, the hurling went okay, but I was lucky too because I was part of a great team, and you know, and as regarding work, yeah, I'm a good car salesman. I suppose I'm able to talk, and but I'm good at my job, yeah. But you see, I always knew that if the drink was causing an issue in this job, I could always move on to the next one. And I was clever enough to know that the fact that I was so good at it, and I used that, and it was the wrong. It's the reason I haven't been in one garage for 30 years. Now, I'm glad I haven't, because I've moved around a bit and I've been in different counties and different countries, yeah, working. Yeah. I admit. So, but really, I was a disaster, because all the time, Gavin, I was fighting an inner battle with myself. Mm. When I was off it, I wanted to be drinking. And I suppose it was easy to stay off it for 4 months if I knew a big piss-up was coming at the end of it. You know,
yes,
and I suppose it's the reason. If you look back the time, I take my relationship with my hurling club, Clare Castle. I ended up leaving, and there would have been a lot of. But you know what? It was very hard to be at peace with anybody when I wasn't at peace with myself. And I'd say, oh, I left Clare Castle. Look, they just saw me at the worst part of my life. And I've never admitted that openly, you know. And they all think, oh, he left us, and he went to Airoga, and he went here and there. You know what? I was just a pretty messed up guy that didn't know how to handle my life any better at the time, and they didn't understand me, and we misunderstood each other, and we ended up falling out, you know. Mm-hmm. Thankfully all that is behind us now, but it's the first time I've actually admitted that we misunderstood each other. They didn't understand what was going on inside me. They were seeing the great goalkeeper, and then they were seeing the guy that had gone missing, and they weren't putting up with that. It was easy for me to flitter off somewhere else.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if it was now, I'd handle it completely differently.
But I wonder though, I mean, that's one example of probably many for any alcoholic, in that your behaviour when you're struggling with your addiction will turn a lot of people off, and they will resent things that you will have done. And you've been very frank and honest in terms of some of the bad things that you have done because you were looking to get money, or because you had to get a drink, or whatever it was. That must be hard to deal with still, in that those ghosts never leave you, for the want of a better term.
They don't, and it's funny, you know, this been talking to you this morning, and thank you for having me on, and it's lovely talking to you, and there was that interview with Claire Bourne last week. It grew legs. I actually did an interview with the Sports Chronicle about my hurling, because as well known, I'm the goalkeeping coach with the Wexford Senior Hurling,
yes,
team,
yeah.
and we're playing Galway in the Leinster Championship next Saturday evening, and I happened to be involved with the Galway goalkeeper as well for his club, and the interview happened because of that. And typically, me being me, I went up to Dublin to do the interview with the Sports Chronicle, and I started talking, and the interview lasted an hour and a half, and it came up about the drinking, and that's how it happened. It, there's nothing to do with ego in this at all, and you know, I can tell you, this is my very last interview. This is my very last interview. I'm finished with it after today, because no, but I don't mean that in a disrespectful way,
no,
because it is bringing up stuff for me that I thought I had dealt with, and like, to me, if I can help anybody not to be tortured like I was for 30 years, this will have been worth doing the interview. But also to acknowledge to to the people that I care about, Ella, my son, my granddaughter, well, she's never seen me drinking, thank God. My mother, what a fantastic woman. Like that woman, what she put up with. And it's funny, we didn't always have a massive close relationship, but I'm absolutely mad about her today, because she the things she did for me, like I'm the luckiest man in the world to have somebody like her in my life, because like that woman, the day I left treatment in Bushy Park, I mean, that woman is living on widow's pension. She's not a wealthy woman. She came up every Wednesday and every Sunday to see me. There was days my sister brought her up, but there was days she got a taxi up to Bushy Park from Clare Castle. I don't care what you say, it's 30 quid up and back, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Saturday morning I came out, she arrived up in a taxi to bring me home. I had nothing. I had €3 to my name. She brought me up, and it's nothing to do with the material part of it. I'm just showing the things. Like, she brought me in, and she got me a mobile phone. My credit rate and everything was so destroyed, I couldn't even get a mobile phone. Do you know, that woman took me into her house again, a house where I had abused her more than once, verbally, you know. And, I'm very, very, very lucky to have a fantastic mother like that. And I didn't always acknowledge it to her, because she was the one that probably saw the wrong end of it a lot of the time. But I want her to know that I'm sorry for the way I treated her. My son Aaron, who saw either the perfect father or a disaster, there was no consistency in me. His mother, Kathy, my ex-partner, another fantastic woman, they're the ones that saw the worst of my drinking. Yeah, it's grand saying, the Clare Castle Hurling Club or Clare or Jobs. Do you know what, at the end of the day, those people didn't really care anyway. It's the people that, but I want the people that are still in my life, and every one of those, Aaron, his mother, my mother, my sister, my brother, their families, they're all still in my life, and I want them to know that I appreciate them standing by me and always being there for me, and I want them to know that I acknowledge the way I behaved, and that's what this is really all about. And then after that, yeah, it can go either way, I don't care really.
It's one of the most honest things I've ever heard anybody say on radio, because you can do that privately, but to do it publicly carries great weight and resonance. When you were drinking, you were in GAA, and I wonder, and perhaps it's still the case, is there something in the culture of sport in Ireland that maybe brought out the worst of you?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think if I had never played senior for Clare Castle at 16 or been involved with adult teams, I think no matter if I had ever taken up a drink, there's something inside in me that's allergic to alcohol. And yes, it might have manifested itself because I was on a seniors hurling team and drinking with lads older than me. But I think no matter if I was outside in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and somebody handed me a drink, it was going to affect me the same way. No, I'm an alcoholic, that I'm allergic to alcohol, and it doesn't matter whether it is, no. It didn't help. But it wasn't the reason or the cause of it.
Okay.
Like, there's nothing wrong with drink, and there's nothing wrong with people having a drink. It's just some of us can't drink, and we shouldn't. It's the person, unfortunately. Sure. Their circumstances might either prolong it or bring it forward a bit. But no, I would have been an alcoholic born outside in Saudi Arabia.
But what about even today? And obviously, you mentioned at the start of the interview, drink was kind of the main vice back in the 1980s. Things have changed very much. There are unfortunately other areas where people can fall prey to their own addictions. Has the culture changed enough that perhaps people will be more sympathetic towards those who are struggling in the way that perhaps you didn't get that sympathy?
I think there's more known about it. Obviously, we're in different times, and with technology and with Google and the internet and all that. Yeah, and to be fair, I was just seen as an idiot. Below our own Mayo place in Clare Castle, to just throw him aside because it's not that they were bad people that did that. They didn't understand. They knew no better. You know. Yeah. Whereas I'd hope today. Just as an example, 1987, the Clare Castle senior team went to London and they banned me from going, okay? They banned me from going with them because I was going to be trouble, okay? Now, I think the people that did it knew no better. They didn't do it out of badness. I hope they didn't anyway. But I would hope today, if I were as part of the Wexford senior setup or Six Mile Bridge or any teams I'm with, I'd be hoping today, if we were heading off after winning a senior championship or a minor championship, that there was a player that had a bit of an issue, I'd hope I'd handle it differently, because I'd hate him to feel like I was made feel by those people not good enough and not worthy of being brought, and that was nearly as bad a feeling as the drink.
How are you now?
Great, thank God. Great, thank God.
Sober and happy?
Sober, happy, very happy. I have a fabulous life. It's very simple. I'm living out in a little cottage outside Portumna with my three German shepherds. I have my granddaughter, who I absolutely adore, Aaron's little lady. I have a fantastic relationship with Aaron, with my mother, with fantastic relationship with Cathy, Aaron's mother. We see each other a lot because of my granddaughter, and I'm up and down to the house. That obviously won't be as much now for the next few weeks.
Of course,
I have a very
yeah.
good job in Galway City, and I'm involved. I was lucky enough, Davy Fitzgerald contacted me a few years ago to get involved in his coaching team. I coached the goalkeepers for Wexford and with Six Mile Bridge, and coached a couple of club teams in Galway. It'd be great next weekend. I'd have Mark Fanning in one goal, who I coached, and Aina Murphy, who'll be in goal for Galway. So I'm hoping the result of that game is 25 points to 24 in favour of Wexford, okay?
As a Galway man, I think it's one of the few things I'll disagree with you on this morning.
But in general, my life is fantastic, thanks. I'm very happy. Not everything has worked out for me. I think a few things went wrong. They have gone wrong. And I have to be very careful of the people, places and things that I associate with or let into my life, because if anything is affecting me, unfortunately, I have to move on from it, because I and it's not in a selfish way, but I can't afford to let anybody or anything or any place drive me back to drink, because I don't think there's another recovery in me.
Well, look at... fingers crossed that won't happen. I've taken a lot of your time. I'll finish with this, because you deserve to hear what the people are saying about you this morning. Áine, what a powerful story. Thank you, Noel, for sharing it and for being so honest. Wishing you health and happiness. Wonderful to hear Noel Considine, a great speaker. Wishing him the very best, says another texter. Morning, Gavin. I'm listening to your programme. I'd like to congratulate Noel Considine on his brilliant talk on alcoholism. Well done, Noel. Another listener knows you a long time. Fair play to you, he says. He definitely had a great battle with alcohol. I hope he keeps the fight going. And Michelle, what an honest emotional interview. Wishing you continued health and happiness and all that is good for the rest of your life.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Noel Considine. The very best of luck to you and to your family going forward, and thank you for joining us and for your honesty this morning.
Pleasure. Thanks.
All the very best. Do take care.